This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It's good to have you along today as we talk with Dr. Marty McCary. He's nationally known, but he grew up right here in Danville, just a few miles from our WPGM studios. Dr. McCary is with us to talk about the pandemic. He's going to talk about COVID and his approach and some of the early warnings he had issued regarding the coming pandemic. Dr. McCary attended Danville High School and went on to Harvard. He's now employed at Johns Hopkins. He's a best-selling author and a health policy expert. You may have seen him on CNN, Fox News, NBC. He's written for publications, including the Wall Street Journal. Dr. Marty McCary is with us today on the program, and we appreciate his time. Thanks for joining us, Dr. McCary. I think people have noticed your approach to COVID and the pandemic has been one of facts and avoiding politics. Has that been your conscious aim? And why do you think this has become so politicized?
Well, I think our society increasingly, Matt, is one with deeply entrenched positions and strong opinions, even if we have no idea what we're talking about. I mean, everybody is just simply pushed into, you know, this idea of everyone falls into a camp. And if we can get rid of the labels, if we can get rid of the echo chambers of, you know, social media and the polarization of cable news, and recognize that we all want the same thing. You know, when there's a pothole in Danville, it's not a red or blue issue. It's a competence issue. And when you look at the major problems facing this country, very broad consensus. I think about healthcare, my own field, there's broad consensus. But anytime you talk about the topics, people tend to want to say, oh, is he on our side or their side? And, you know, I'm one who just sort of independently will speak to the science and the facts. And that means criticizing both political parties. I don't have loyalty where I stick to party talking points. And sometimes that's a lonely place.
And now you're not an epidemiology is not your area, but the health policy is that kind of where why you're being approached so much to talk about this?
Yeah, I studied epidemiology at the Harvard School of Public Health, where I got a master's degree. But and I spend most of my time doing public health research at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health for the last 15 years. But I'm mostly a public policy and healthcare systems researcher. I'm just sort of in the middle of COVID because as editor-in-chief of one of our big trade publications in medicine, I had to read all these papers coming in from the experts. And early on, as you know, I sounded the alarm in late February and early March of last year when I realized other people were not and telling people to get ready. I called for the lockdowns early on. It was scary, right? We didn't know if we were going to lose 1% of America's kids to this virus. We didn't have good data. And then soon after, I wrote a piece that went viral in the New York Times saying, we've got to reopen carefully and cautiously, and we've got to do it through universal masking. So a lot of these positions were unpopular at the time. And now I'm trying to, you know, speak truth as I see it out there.
You talked about herd immunity a few weeks back in an article. But first of all, can you define that? You know, are we reaching that point? At what point will we be there?
Yeah, so herd immunity is not binary. It's not all or nothing. It's kicked in, actually. Herd immunity is when more and more people are immune and there's gradually increased slowing of the spread. And so now you've got over half the population, roughly, with some form of immunity, either from prior natural immunity from prior infection or from vaccination. And when you put that together, you're starting to hit levels where there's just fewer susceptible people out there. Super spreading events are less likely to occur. There's more breaks in the chain of transmission. So if you go to our Johns Hopkins website, for example, you'll see herd immunity defined very broadly as when a majority of people have some immunity and you start seeing slowing. I think people sometimes, you know, the terms become a loaded term because some people think it's like a switch and one day we're going to be, you know, classes out and we can go play. It's really not going to be that way. And also early on, people suggested a kind of let it rip strategy, and that was called the herd immunity strategy. That was a terrible idea. No one should have ever really subscribe to that. It should have been heard as an idea, right? We should have an open discussion of ideas, but it ended up resulting in higher mortality rates. So it became a loaded term.
At this point, who should be getting shots? I mean, it seems like every aspect of this pandemic has just led to fighting and confusion. But where do we stand with that? You know, who should be getting the shots first? Or what are your thoughts on how that process is working out?
Well, we've done a terrible job allocating and appropriating the vaccine and designated who should be getting it first. We basically should be using a simple risk stratification where people at the highest risk get it first. 80% of the deaths have been in people over age 65. Most of them are now vaccinated. But I think everyone should get vaccinated at some point. The question is, while we've got a scarce resource and we're rationing a life-saving drug, that is the vaccine, who do we go to next? And that allocation, in my opinion, should have it that if you've had the infection in the past, if you've had COVID in the past for sure, that is tested positive, then step aside in the vaccine line. Natural immunity is very good. There's a study that just came out on that from Denmark. And step aside in the vaccine line until we can get the most vulnerable vaccinated. And then those folks should get a vaccine to boost their antibodies. Also, I don't think we should be scheduling the second dose of the two-dose regimens at 3 and 4 weeks while we're severely supply constrained. We should be pushing that out to 12 weeks or so. That's my own personal opinion, but a lot of experts are with me on this. Dr. Ashish Jha, Bob Wachter, Chris Gill from Boston, Michael Osterholm on the Biden COVID task force. He proposed this vocally and was basically shut down on the Biden COVID task force by Dr. Fauci on this. And I've got a piece coming out on this shortly. Delaying that second dose allows more people to get a life-saving first dose. That first dose gives 92% efficacy, has a 92% efficacy at 4 weeks. Why are we spending half the vaccine supply to boost that from 93 to 95% now, while we're very limited on the vaccine and turning people away? Let's delay that second dose, make sure everyone gets it, but in due time, in say 3 months from the first dose. And that is what the UK is doing. That, Matt, is why the UK is winning the war against coronavirus. They've delayed that second dose, and guess what? They've got 58% of their adult population vaccinated. Despite being dominated by a contagious variant, B.1.1.7, the UK is winning. Cases there are declining, and we've got a 7-day average now of less than 64 cases per day in the UK. Pretty darn good for a country one-fifth our size.
Wow. Now, so what would you, you know, if someone's gotten that first dose, do you say, just wait, or once you've gotten your first dose, you're going to be out of the loop if you don't get it when they're telling you to come back?
Yeah, I tell people to wait. I'm waiting till 3 months for my first dose. Actually, to be honest, I'm going to wait until we're no longer supply constrained, and then I'm going to get my second dose. If you're on immunosuppression medication, though, I would say get that second dose soon. But that's the carve out because we know that those people probably are not mounting a good antibody response. Most people should just wait. I would say when they press you to schedule your second dose at 3 weeks or 4 weeks, just tell them you're going to have it done in 3 months or down the road.
Okay. Yeah, I know I had to fill out a paper specifically saying I will come back in 4 weeks. I will, you know, that sort of thing. Is that the process everywhere?
Why are we so paternalistic about this? I mean, can't we give people the data and let them make their own decision? I mean, studies are overwhelming. And like I said, I'll have a piece, I think it's coming out in the Wall Street Journal this week, showing how efficacious the first dose is in the short term, right? The second dose helps with the durability long term. But while we're at war with this virus, let's focus on first doses and let people make their own decisions.
As far as the different vaccines, is there a preference, or do you say go for one or the other, or are they all pretty much the same? And not only in their efficacy, but you know how they function in the body, what they do.
Yeah, there are tiny differences. I would say consider them negligible. The bigger risk is that if you want to try to pick your vaccine, you're going to just go probably longer until you get vaccinated. And that delay of time until you get your first dose is the biggest risk. That's the biggest difference. If you delay it trying to get a certain type, you're adding risk. There's still a fair amount of virus circulating out there. So, look, there's small differences. Moderna basically uses a higher dose. The Pfizer-BioNTech, interestingly, you think Pfizer developed it. They didn't. BioNTech developed it. Pfizer's manufacturing and distributing and doing other things. That's a great vaccine. It's a slightly lower dose, so the risk of those sort of short-term, immediate little side effects like the soreness and the fatigue are a little less with that Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine than the Moderna. Some say they like the stronger response. It's a more revved-up immune response. They're both very good. I would say basically equal, and the J&J similar, but it's one dose instead of two.
When someone's had COVID, are they protected to a degree for a time?
Yeah, this is an interesting sort of public debate that I've had with Dr. Fauci and others, and that is, why are we saying that we have to vaccinate 70 to 85% in order to reach herd immunity when upwards of 50% of the population has natural immunity from prior infection? Look, I still think we should get everyone vaccinated. We're not debating the goal. What I'm debating is the honesty of sort of the statement that we have to do this in order as a prerequisite for herd immunity, kind of holding the American people hostage to the idea that we can't do this unless everyone gets vaccinated. Look, everyone should get vaccinated mostly to protect against the fall wave and other concerns, but natural immunity is effective. Now, there's nothing's perfect, but this is a big debate we've had. How common is natural immunity? This is the subject of some of the Wall Street Journal pieces I've put out there on the projections. And how effective is it? Some of these old guard medical establishment guys like Dr. Fauci have downplayed how common it is and have dismissed that it's even effective. Or they basically say, we don't know. Well, a study just came out of Denmark looking at millions of people, and it found that, hundreds of thousands of people, basically showing that the reinfection rate was 0.6%. During a time when the virus was circulating widely, that is, they were dealing with massive surges. So what's happening? If the reinfection rate is that low, natural immunity is protective. There's other studies on it. It works. I'm not saying, go out there and exhibit bad behavior and rip off your mask if you've got natural immunity. I'm just saying that we can be honest with the data, that it's contributing to herd immunity.
Did you ever imagine you would be where you are now in your career in navigating a pandemic? Or is that something folks in your profession always felt that it was a possibility?
Gosh, no. I went to Danville High School, went to all my school in Danville, went to Bucknell there locally. I remember filling in for George Vacco one day when WPGM had some event, and I went to the station and helped out. And I love Danville. I love the area there. I never really thought I'd be able to have the privilege of going to Harvard, coming back to Johns Hopkins, serving in the School of Public Health, and then being sort of caught in the middle of this national conversation. So it's a real privilege, but one I think should humble anybody. It's a very serious time, and this pandemic should have taught all of us in medicine that we need to have showed some humility around a virus that we have yet to fully understand. And I think ultimately, when you look at where we've gone wrong in the pandemic, it has been a matter of a lack of humility. As a scientist, you've always got to be willing to recognize that you may have done something wrong. You may have made a wrong assumption and need to evolve your position. And I think that's the mark of somebody in the medical profession that I admire. And I've tried to do that myself after calling for the lockdowns, recognizing that we need to wear masks, talking about schools and some of these other issues.
Physician, health policy expert, author, and former resident of Danville, Dr. Marty McCary. He's been our guest today on the WPGM Community Forum, talking about the pandemic and where we go from here. Dr. McCary, thanks for being with us, and we want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in. This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the Community Forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.